This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Everybody, Pete Caliendo, what's up? Thanks for joining us on Zoom, Facebook Live, and on Twitter. This is Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. It's going to be a great day. We're going to get right to it. Love the guest that we have. I love this guy just because he's just a straight shooter, honest person, just let you know exactly what he thinks, and that's the way he should be. Shouldn't be hiding things. You know, everybody knows him. He's currently the bench coach with the Milwaukee Brewers, the manager with the Padres. Also 1,000 wins in collegiate baseball, Arizona State and Notre Dame. I mean, there's no introduction here. Let's just get ready to start with just a super guy, man. This guy's awesome. Let me welcome Pat Murphy to the show. What's up, Pat?
Thanks, Pete. Thanks for having me on. My pleasure.
Hey, are you kidding? You got so many of these. I'm lucky that you got me in, and I really appreciate it. I got to thank you a lot, man. So, hey, talk about right away, and then we'll start with some questions. Talk about what Pat Murphy's doing right now during these times and how you're dealing with it.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to look at it as an opportunity. You know, really, we can dig in and try to dissect the good and the bad, but I just think just use it as an opportunity to do things you couldn't normally have time to do. Spend more time with the kids. That's number one. But also, you know, just educate yourself. Try to grow. Somehow try to make this into a positive and grow. And doing stuff like this, which I've been able to do, is really fun. I learn a lot.
And speaking about growing, I think it'd be a great way to start because, man, you got an incredible career. You made it to the highest level of collegiate baseball, highest level of Major League Baseball. But things weren't that easy early on. No. You know, everybody, you know, you had some rough times. Talk about the growth factor, how this all kind of came about, where you started and how it ended up here.
Yeah, you know, I was a nobody from nowhere. And, you know, what I always say, Pete, is we're all under construction. And I'm still under construction. You know, we keep going and trying to grow and learn from our past. And I started at Division III. I was still playing minor league baseball and coaching Division III football and baseball. I had kind of a football mentality. I got lucky and got the job in Notre Dame. And I say lucky because they didn't have a real successful program at the time. They were thinking about dropping it. They didn't have a field. They didn't have scholarships. And they figured this guy can't screw it up. But I certainly didn't get it because of my resume. I had Division III. I had some international ball. I had some pro ball. But they gave me the job. It was a part-time baseball job and no scholarships. And it, you know what? It just – it all lined up, Pete. It made me look good. It all lined up. But I wasn't anything special. It was just I was around good people at a great university. And it just grew, kind of all grew together. And I got a lot of credit for it that I don't deserve. But yeah, it was an intense time. I was out of my mind most of the time, just trying to grind and get better and get better and make them better. And didn't have a great perspective on anything. Wasn't mature. Didn't like other coaches. Didn't think you're supposed to like other coaches. You know what I mean? You're supposed to hate the opponent. And you know, it was a great learning experience. You know, we did have a lot of wins on the field, and it. Like I said, it made me look good. I got offered a lot of jobs, but I certainly wasn't a good coach. And that's a danger I think all coaches need to think about. Like, it's not your wins. We averaged 7 years at Notre Dame. We averaged 46 point something wins a year. That doesn't make you a good coach. You know, the numbers were eye-popping. I probably did some good things, but, you know, I was a long way from being in the growth mindset and being in an egoless mindset. Once we started winning big, my ego got crazy. And then, you know, all these jobs are coming in. I finally take the job at Arizona State, and I have no idea what I'm getting into. And, you know, again, got there, and same thing. Didn't know enough to change. And, you know, played for national championship 4 years later, so I must be a good coach. But it was the birth of my son that really kind of gave me some perspective that every one of these kids is somebody's little boy, you know, and that helped me change. A guy named Harvey Dorfman came into my life, and he became a great friend and mentor, and he changed a lot of things. And and I'm still on the construction. I'm still going, man. A lot of great opportunities, met a lot of great people, and just trying to get better.
You know, aren't we all under construction all the time, man? I catch myself doing stuff, sometimes shaking my head. Why did I do that? Why did I say that? You know, when you look back, what if you got young coaches here possibly that want to get into college baseball. When you look back, talk about maybe some advice for them, a different direction to go into. Because no doubt you piss some guys off along the way, and sometimes that doesn't always help all the time. You were able to fight through it somehow.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Dorfman used to say it's like a pendulum, Murph. You know, you're a real ass, and everybody knows you as an ass. You're not really showing your true self. But then don't go ahead and swing the pendulum all the way the other way and pretend like you're Mr. Nice Guy. You know, just kind of let it be aware of it and kind of let it settle where it does and be authentic and be genuine. And being intense is fine, but you got to learn when it helps you and when it doesn't. But being genuine is more important than anything. And being a little gentler, I wasn't very gentle, you know, because I thought you weren't supposed to be. I was just growing as a coach. So I would tell them to be genuine, be gentle, be grateful, you know, I mean, and be a giver, you know, give your information, give your time, care about the kids. They know if you're in it for yourself or you're in it for them. And then don't believe you can't. Wherever you're coming from, wherever you're at, you can go to any level you want to go to if the situation arises. And you have to put yourself in those situations. There's a lot of sacrifice. There's a lot of luck, I believe, or just circumstance, whatever you want to call it. But, I think it starts with who we are inside. And, you know, we pretend like we're not scared. We're all scared. We pretend like we know things, and we all don't know a bunch of stuff. So, it's just the willingness to be open and aware and learn from everybody, and the anger part and the envy and the jealousy and all those negative emotions. They don't serve us at all. The worry, I wonder if, can I get the next job? You know, all that crap is just, it's just a huge waste of time.
You know, we're going to get to some specifics when it comes to actually coaching, managing and all that, the communication. But one thing I do want to ask is, you know, you talk about Harvey Dorfman. You've had a lot of guys along the way that you've either encountered, been with, learned from. I know you talked about Lou Holtz at one time. I remember you a long time ago talking about Lou Holtz. What are some of the things you took away from some of these top leaders that helped you?
I mean, Lou Holtz, you bring him up. That's a great, great memory for me. I'm still in contact with him. Special human being. He saw me for what I was, a young, dumb coach that was trying like hell. And he really helped me. He'd sit me down and he talked to me, and he talked about leadership. He talked about not going with the tide, but not being afraid to know that the tide ain't going the right way. Turn around and go against the tide. And he was a guy who he set a tone of who he was. And he set the tone that he was going to make, somebody had to make these decisions. And it didn't mean you couldn't empower other people to help you, but you certainly couldn't run it, you know, very democratic. You know, you had to run it a little more authoritative. Say the word for me, Peter.
Authoritative.
So Lou was wonderful, man. He had a real soft side, but you know, he didn't show it to his players all the time. But like Lou would say, you know what I like? I like players that play good. You know, what type of player you like, Lou? I like players that play good. I never forgot that. Play good, that's all. And consistently play good. Great teacher. I go to practice almost every day and just watch him. You know, he was tough on his assistants, man. He was, ask Barry Alvarez. Ask these guys, Chuck Heater, ask these guys, man. He was tough on his assistants. But Harvey Dorfman, Ken Revisa, I mean, those guys, I mean, I couldn't ask them enough questions. I couldn't talk to them enough. And most of it came back to myself and accepting myself and accepting my faults and kind of failing forward. And, those are great people to have in your life. And all of you can go find people like that. You know, all of you can run into people that really will strike a chord with you. And you don't know who it is. You know, you just don't know. I've sat with Ted Williams, Tony Gwynn. I've sat with some of the best hitting guys that ever existed. And I'm going to tell you, I've learned as much hitting from some guy that never played in the big leagues than I did from big league hitters. You know, I've sat with Barry Bonds at length. This guy knows, you know, what he's doing up there. But that doesn't mean that's the only guy that can teach you hitting, you know, or teach you about hitting, especially coaching hitting. You know, hitting is one thing, but coaching the deal is a whole different deal.
Pat, is there something, you know, it's interesting throughout your career, how you treated players, let's say in college baseball, right. And then later on, even in professional baseball, some of the changes you made, because you just mentioned, you know, Holtz was tough on his coaches. Were you tough on your players in a way now that would be different now?
Yeah, I'd be put in jail. I would have been. I'd be put in jail now. Yeah, it'd be a jail sentence. I'd still be there probably. Yeah. You got to understand the subject. You got to understand where you're coming from. You know, nobody will. You know, criticize me for saying what I felt or being right to the point with those guys, but I was just a little inappropriate. You know, just too intense, too driven, and a lot of that was my ego and wanting success for myself and the program more than developing a young man and helping him understand how he can contribute. But I wasn't equipped back then. I wasn't equipped to do it differently. I think as you get older and you start to realize, like I said, when my son was born in 2000, it's like I started to realize, like, and then like 2004, 2005, I started to realize, you know, every one of these kids is somebody's Kai Joseph. And I gotta understand that. Somebody messes with my kid. I don't care who it is. That ain't working. So it helped me have a different perspective on coaching and how to come from love. And it's really transformed me into like coming from a different spot. I was still tough on them. I was still bizarre. I still talked about, you know, conceptual standards in the game, balls versus strikes, you know, leaving the zone, you know, attacking the zone as a pitcher. I still talk about generalities, about treating yourself good. What did that mean? I'd say prepare to play good, then play good, then treat yourself good, and explaining those concepts, you know. And we had a run at Arizona State. I think they said it was 95 weeks in the top 10, and we had a consistent run that was really propelled by the players, and they just wouldn't get off certain standards that we set. And man, it was really special. And whatever adversity we had, we got to send to Fullerton 5 out of 6 years for postseason. And, you know, it seemed like we could never escape that. And we finally broke through and beat them. And a lot of good things happened after that. But, you know, whatever adversity, these guys held standards. And they made it their program. That's when I started learning, like, hey, man, use the people around you. You know, I had some good coaches and started to let them coach a little bit instead of try to control everything. Yeah. And now you're a bench coach. Now it's a totally different deal, totally different, but a great learning experience. And I get to do it from one of my former players who's never coached before, but he's taught me a crap load. And he never coached before. So it's like, how's that happen? You know, it's pretty cool experience, all the changes and all the construction. I'm waiting to get the house done someday, but I don't think I'm ever going to get it done. It's always going to be under construction.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think all of us are going to be under construction all the way till the last day of our lives. The players nowadays, it's interesting you were talking about them. Nowadays, players now, players back then, have the players changed, or is the game changing, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, I mean, bigger, stronger, faster, more detail, more understanding. You know, go back and look at the 70s. Go back when the heyday of when we were watching baseball. Like, go back and look at those swings. Look at that bat speed. Look at that. Now, there's some special moments in there. Like, you can't tell me Pedro Martinez or Mariano Rivera or Derek Jeter couldn't play today. I mean, or you can keep going, you know, with many, 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 many more players. I think the mentality – has shifted a little bit. I think guys back then played with a mentality that they understood, and they understood that the only people that mattered were your teammates. And they had to understand that you were a teammate and that you know how to play the game and that you were trying to help the team win the game that moment. And that's how you lived your life back then. Now it's more, I got to get mine. And that's not, it sounds bad, but it's not necessarily bad. I mean, these guys are trying to survive in a world and do what they can to maximize their playing careers. And there's a little more of that. There's a little more individualism. There's a little more, or there's a little less emphasis on team. But now you're seeing the great teams create a culture. And I think Counts has done that with the Brewers. I mean, we've had three of the best years in Brewer history consecutively. And it Counts has built a culture that, you know, starts with a connection between players. And he forces that, and he understands it, and he promotes it, and the guys get it. And so a small market team like the Brewers can do what we're doing with that emphasis on a culture. And I think you're seeing that players are starting to be better teammates and starting to be care about the others. They certainly learn from each other as much as they do from the coaches.
You know, I love seeing the small market teams that, you know, are so successful. You know, I know everybody looks at success as you got to win the World Series. I don't. I think with the small budget, with the way you're creating culture, with the way you're developing players, what, you know, all different ways that you can be successful. How do you hold in Milwaukee? It's the difficult part. How do you hold players accountable? Are the players do it themselves, or is there a system in place?
Yeah, they're pros. And I think the one thing they understand is you can't go off the rails too much. You really can't. You can't isolate yourself. You can't go make it all about you 100% of the time. You got some responsibility, and you got to be accountable. Now, oftentimes, that doesn't mean you're coming out of the lineup. But you don't want the wrath of your fellow players these days. You don't. And in the back in the day, there was way more confrontation. It was how we were brought up, Pete. Like kid pushing in the yard, you got up, you know, and you probably made a move. But you know, like today, that doesn't happen. That type of confrontation just doesn't happen. And I think that's good. It doesn't happen. You think of the nonsense we went through. But so everybody's more educated, everybody's more exposed. There's way more pressure on these guys than ever before. And there's a bigger carrot. And so it's just a little different. It's a little more fragile, I would say, a little more fragile. That's why culture can really build a thickness and a bond that makes it a little bit, you know, stronger. But these guys are human beings. They're scared. They're worried about the same stuff. They're, you know, they go through their same idiosyncrasies and negative emotions and doubts. But so coaching is coaching people, you know, the technique and stuff, they've got a good grip on that. So it's not so much technique. It's more analysis of that technique but more understanding what makes them tick as people, what makes them bond to others, what makes them comfortable being uncomfortable, what makes them, you know, be willing to change, be willing to be part of something a little different, you know. And we keep it loose now. We keep it loose. There ain't a whole lot of seriousness going on. Like, I mean, I don't think you, through good times and bad, we're just on each other hard. And, you know, it's, I think it's one of my jobs is just to make sure that we stay hard on each other.
You know, and speaking about that, and folks, you know, feel free, put on the chat any questions you have if you're on Zoom live or if you're on Facebook also. Just type it in the comments section. Love to hear some questions from you. You know, Murph, I know there's people out there that in the past always thought, you know, hey, this is one tough dude, and you are, no doubt about it. But I've also heard you speak and use a lot of humor. And sometimes, you know, in a long season, you know, you can't just be tough all the time. How do you mix the humor in with your players to keep them loose?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's something that I've come to know is a big part of my deal, is that we have to keep it fun. We have to make them feel, we have to help them feel, you know, comfortable, and that you're part of us, and you got to being exposed in our clubhouse is a good thing. That means we love you. And we kind of come from, I think humor, there's some love in there when we're getting on you or when you're getting on me. It's a sign of love and connection. And I think that the tough guy thing, you know, like, here's my thing, Pete. You know, if you look at how I grew up and you looked at like the number of fist fights I get in or the number of people that would say, oh yeah, he's tough. You know, I wasn't tough. I was stupid. You could throw stupid on there, but not tough. You know, accepting a fight isn't tough. It's stupid. You know, hanging in there when you're hurt or something. I mean, like all the things that were labeled back then as tough, a lot of it was just stupid. And I think that what I've come to learn in coaching is we better be really careful how we label kids. It's a real pet peeve of mine to hear somebody throw out the P word for some kid that doesn't compete or whatever. And you throw out the P word. To me, that would get me out of my mind. Even when you're describing it to a buddy, like, hey, this kid's up. No way. You know, that's just, we all can access mental toughness. We all can access mental toughness. And it's learned. It's not just, oh, he's just made that way. His dad was tough. And, you know, his dad was a cop for 30 years. And blah, 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 blah. You know, that's just all nonsense. We all are scared. We're all weak. We all are the P word. Go ahead. I mean, we all have done that in our lives. And we all have accessed mental toughness. So I don't like to label anybody as anything. It's just, when do you access it? And can you access it consistently? Do you know how? Are you willing to talk about it? Are you willing to talk about fear? You know, I boxed for a short time and in the amateurs and at different points in my life, probably four different points in my life. And, you know, every fight, every time the bell rang, I said the same thing to myself. Like, what am I doing? This is stupid. And I was scared to death. And then you do that for like 1,000, 1,002, and then you go, okay, I better do this. You know, I signed up. I better do it. And it usually goes okay. But what you're doing is you're just accessing mental toughness, but you're being honest with yourself. I had a chance to talk to St. Pierre, the GSP, the great, you know, what do they call that type of fighting? Whatever, in the cage.
Oh, yeah, bear fight. The UCF or whatever, the bear fighting, the hands
UFC,
and the kicking.
Yeah. Yeah,
Dana UFC. White runs it, and long,
yeah.
Joe Rogan's an announcer. Yep.
Yeah, the St. Pierre is one of the greatest
of
all
time.
Those
guys are tough.
I got a chance to meet him, and I said, "Man, I boxed a lot, and I marvel at you guys, what you do. It seems like so much more reckless and tough sport." And we got into the whole fear factor and convincing himself and preparation, and how I said to him that same story, like I was afraid every time the bell rang, and he said, so am I to some extent, but you kind of just fake it till you make it. You just talk yourself into it and you say I'm prepared, and you realize, you know what, it's normal to be a little anxious. And we had a great discussion. He's a beautiful man to talk to about all that kind of competition and mental toughness. You know, and he's one of the greatest champions of all time,
you know? Absolutely. Let's take some questions. It'd be a good time. You know, Frank asks, why is it the old school coaches can't find their way in today's game? And I'm, you know, again, you can, I'm not sure how you exactly qualify old school coaches, but that's one area. My dog heard the bell. He's running.
Again, so here's the thing, you know, it's like when cell phones came out, you know, we had to learn to use a cell phone. If you didn't do that, if you weren't willing to do that, then you weren't going to be a good communicator, because nobody was going to call you on your rotary phone because nobody had one. You know, you couldn't call from a phone booth anymore because they've been eliminated. So you got to make the change to cell phone. So if you're an old school coach, what does that mean? You believe in what? Winning, preparation, high standards, love, transformation, development. That's the same thing these new guys believe in. They just use a different language. And we have to adjust to it. Because as the world goes, you have to adjust to it. You know, we were eating lard with our food and whole milk, and we were doing all those things back in the day that now we don't do. You have to adjust to it because people were dying of this and this. Well, you're going to die in the sport if you don't adjust to – you don't have to know all that. They know you're not going to jump in and use the computer and use the Rapsodo and Edutronics the way they do. Let them be the expert at that. But find a common ground, you know, find a common ground to understand what they're talking about, because it's not that complicated. Just like the cell phone isn't complicated, but some use it better than others. And some choose not to use it. And that's okay to some extent. But I mean, I don't like even the term old school. You know, we're all the same. We're coaching. We're trying to help young men find their best self. And the old school for me, that's what we're always trying to do. Win games, develop players, you know, build relationships that are everlasting. Yeah, that's what we do. It's the privilege of what we do. We could be working. That wouldn't be good.
Well said. And one of the coaches actually on that talks about the data and, you know, how you adjusted to the data. Did it take you some time? And Did the Brewers use it quite a bit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you make a commitment to it. And I'm not great at it. I'll be the first one to say it. But I know I'm not great at it. So I don't push it off like it's not important. I just know I'm not great at it. I seek to understand what it is I can understand. And I find some of these young kids that really that's all they know. And it's kind of a give and take. There's a kid from Illinois, actually, that's a huge part of our staff, Walker McKinven. He played at like Binghamton never played in the minor leagues. He got hired as an intern. Then all of a sudden he's doing advanced scouting. He's unbelievable at all this understanding, all this new age evaluation. And we kind of give and take. I talk to him about some of the stuff I've been through, and he talks to me about, well, Murph, you got to understand it. They're seeing this and this and this. So how do you translate that? It's just it's finding someone that can kind of be that bridge for you and the give and take of, you know. And then he's not afraid to say to me, hey, Murph, you should really get on this and you should really understand this website and what those terms mean, because that's when you talk in those terms, then you're more apt to be understood by these people. So it works out.
You know, there's a young man, Salomo, 23 years old, a coach. He asks about coaching at high levels when you're younger. How do you maintain to be the right level? How do you maintain the right authority? You know, coming in as a 23-year-old and you're coaching, you know, how do you get, I guess, people's respect, the players' respect and all that?
Yeah, well, first they got to see, they're watching everything you do. And you got to check your ego at the door. If there's a way at 23 to check your ego, I don't know that there is, but if there's a way to check your ego, do it. Be as humble as you can. Do not coach from power. You know, do not use power to coach. Don't try to gain power over them. Don't try to gain authority. Be genuine, be informative, be honest, you know, be humble and be well prepared. Lay out your game plan, how you want to do it. Communicate with players one-on-one. Don't try to, you know, recreate the wheel. It's still about a player going to the plate or going to the mound feeling like $1 million and feeling like, wow, I can do this. That's what the premise is. But those players go to the plate or go to the mound or go to the field feeling like $1 million, I can do this, you will have your rewards of those guys playing right. And if they're just simply not good enough, they will get better because they got the right attitude going out there. And we try too hard. I mean, that's what we do. We try too hard. I'm going to have the best practice plan that ever existed. Okay, great. That don't mean jack. You know what I mean? Okay, I'm going to have the best hitting information, the hitting system, the hitting drills. Hey, make it flexible as possible. It's like a manual for rules. The more you're right, the more you're limited. So make it flexible as possible. Add your own little, it's like stirring a soup all day. You're trying to make the soup. You're Italian, Pete?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you've had good Sunday meals, right? Mom or dad are cooking the sauce and everything. Well, I'm Irish. I grew up in an Italian neighborhood in Syracuse. So I'd go down Sundays. I was smart enough on Sundays to get down and just walk down the street like I was homeless. Somebody would invite me in and I'd get a good Sunday Italian meal. But you're always, nobody messes with the sauce, right? I mean, hey, this is our sauce, you know? And I think in coaching, we're constantly stirring the soup, trying to make it taste a little better, add a little of this, maybe not so much of this, and find your own recipe for what makes you and then evaluate it and evaluate it and evaluate it. But do it with certainty, walk with certainty. And if you don't know anything else, just say, I love my job, and go out there with just that. You know what I mean? And but just be as authentic. Don't try to trick them. You know, I think it's important.
You know, Matt mentioned, I was thinking about it earlier and I didn't get a chance to ask it. You know, the when you talk about, you read a lot of things about leaders. One of the things you hear about, especially like in corporations, you hear leaders have got, you know, the best ones admit their mistakes. Now, I got a feeling Pat Murphy didn't do that early on. Maybe did you, how did that change as far as admitting mistakes? When you make a mistake, you know, people are human.
You got to be good enough to admit your mistakes. If you're not admitting mistakes, I tell everybody, I've done a lot of things. I made every mistake probably twice or more. And if you're growing as a human being, you understand those mistakes are the very thing that vaulted you into a better place. And I think if you're in the growth mindset, you're truly under construction, you're constantly talking about your mistakes. You're constantly, you know, remembering those moments where you just did, you made poor decisions, or you opened your mouth too much, or you made opinions that just they weren't worth making. They're out of emotion. That's where you make your mistakes. You know, your emotion and your mouth. You gonna work out, bro?
Yeah.
All right. I'll be out there.
I love the part that you keep mentioning, the growth mindset, because it really seems like, man, you've come a long ways. I love it. You know, Coach Fuller talks about the mental game here, and he says, how's it changed from Notre Dame to today? How kind of evolved the mental game? Because you talk about it
Just it's the understanding, you know, Coach. It's like, you know, clarity is one of the real big things for these guys, you know, like they got way too much on their mind going to the plate or going to the mound or whatever. And they got to have clarity, and clarity comes with great preparation and great belief system. So, and then there's confidence in there, right? When you have a great preparation and belief system, you'll gain confidence. And that's, we make it too complicated, you know, keep it simple, stupid, and swing at strikes, take balls, you know, have the right flight plan on your ball that you hit. You know, have the right angle on your pitches and changing speeds in the zone. You know, like, it's still that game. And I think that, you know, oftentimes the mentality becomes too complicated. And I think breathing is important. I think stillness, clarity, visualization is all really important stuff.
Pat, you know, we got a coach, Jay Pesci. He's an A-ball coach, young A-ball coach.
Jay Pesci, Stanford shortstop.
It might
five,
be.
Seven. This yeah. kid could pick up a ground ball like no one else. I'm going to tell you, one of the most impressive things in my career at Arizona State was going to Stanford and watching Pesci pick up ground balls in pregame. It was unbelievable. This kid's work ethic, this kid's consistency. I'm surprised he didn't play in the big leagues. He wasn't, you know, he's 5'2" or something, but I'm going to tell you.
He's online. I don't know if you can see his photo. You should really see his picture there, video.
Are you standing up? You must be standing up. You're barely to the cap.
I'm not that sure. Anyways, I remember
You were a pleasure, man. I tell you, you stood out. I don't even know you really, man, but you stood out, and it was incredible to watch this kid's diligence, work ethic, intent. I mean, I can't even tell you, man. It's like we bring it up sometimes when some of the Arizona State guys get together, we bring it up. You remember Pesci? That little so-and-so, I mean, we never have good words to say about you.
He's Italian. He's got to be tough.
Well, of course.
I remember playing you guys after the game, going through the line, shaking hands, and you were screaming at me, that's the way you play it. And I remember that just stuck with me for a long time. So that was
Jay,
part of your intensity off and your genuineness. So was,
Jay, you're also better off asking the question. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So as of now, I'm a bench coach with the Mets in single A. So I was just going to ask you about.
Are you really?
What it's
awesome.
Yeah. You've been a bench coach. You've been a manager. So the interaction between those two during the game, do you have any specifics? Any
who's advice who's for your me? Who's your manager?
Reed Brignac. So he's played with the Rays.
Yeah. I hear great things about him. No, I think you learn him first and foremost, and you do your own preparation. So you're an A-ball. You're not going to worry about double switches. You're not going to worry about, you know, bench players and that type of thing. You do want to inform them of the health of the player. You want to inform them of availability. You've already got your pitching script, you know, But I think it's a general conversation during the game, not kind of giving him, I wouldn't say giving him ideas, but just bringing up situations. You know, we got, hey, we could have guys on base here, and we got so-and-so coming up. Would that be a chance where you want somebody ready to pinch hit? Now, you may have it in your mind, Jay, like, hey, we got to win this game. There's no way we're letting so-and-so hit. You know what I mean? He's an older kid. He hasn't doing the job, and we got an opportunity for some young kid to come off the bench and avoid a left on left situation. You know it's the right move, but you don't tell him that. You just say, "Hey, Reed, what do you think, man? You know, we got a situation here coming up with so and so coming up. Would you think put it in a question, mate? Would you think this good time for so and so? You want me to have him ready?" And just, you're always in communication with the players on the bench, letting them know what could happen. Hey, man, go get yourself stretched. Hey, whatever it might be. And I think you can do it in a real, like, consistent but relaxed form so it doesn't have them panic. Yeah, I think you stay up on the game. You know, you look at the game. I'll tell you one thing that's helped me is you learn the rules. You learn these umpires are trying like hell, but you're getting these young umpires. They don't know the rules as well as they think. And then you tell Reed, hey, Reed, the rule is this. The rule is this. And I think if you took one rule a day, you'd still be confused as hell. I've been doing it for 6 years, and I'm confused every freaking time. But, you know, it's like, it's at least you're working at it. Something might click. But the rules are important. Even the silly things, like, you might win a game for your team by knowing the ground rules at that stadium. You know what I mean? Yeah. Better than the umpire. You know, it takes take a minute to know the ground rules. Take a minute to learn a different rule on obstruction or on things that are going to happen in the game. And then, then you're constantly on the bench. You're walking up and down. And I don't think you need to stand right next to the guy. For me as a manager, I never let, like, the guy standing next to me. Like, I didn't really want to talk to you. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't really want to – when I want to talk to you, I turn around. And that's why with counts, I stand back behind him. And when he wants me, he just kind of looks kind of to the right. And I know that's what he means. It's kind of his signal. I go up to him, and he might say, like, hey, what do you think? I'm parched, man. I need a water or a Diet Coke right now, man. What do you think? He's like, damn it, Murphy, I'm concentrating on the GD game. Who do you think? I'm like, I don't know, Counts. I'll bring you some sunflower seeds.
Jay, you're on a roll. You got another one?
Sure. Jay, where are you living? Where are you living right now?
In California, near San Francisco.
Hey, your manager, the guy that just took the job there, Rojas.
Yes.
This guy's tremendous, dude. Like, I'm real close with Moises, and that's Moises' brother. And yeah. And Brody's sensational. Yeah, you guys got some great things on the horizon.
Hey, Murph, you talk about managers at all different levels. What's the top characteristics when you say, I love this guy? What makes him that good, that impresses you?
I'm going to tell you a story. 2015, I'm the interim manager of the Padres. We're having a rough season when I take over. We're in last place. And you know, the only team that we can beat is the Rockies, maybe, in the division. And Walt Weiss is the manager. And they're just not clicking. They don't have much pitching, I guess. Injuries, whatever. They got Arenado and Tulo and whatever. But anyways, we're in San Diego, and it's going to rain. Okay, and the Rockies are winning 2-0. And it's the top of the fifth. They got a man on second and nobody out. And the rain comes. And the umpires get – so they take us off the field. It's the top of the fifth. It's not quite a complete game. The umpires come back out and go, hey, look, we got a 45-minute window in. We get this 45 minutes and we can get the fifth inning. It was a Sunday afternoon. We can get the fifth inning in and get out of here. And Walt Weiss spoke up and said, I don't feel good about that. I know I'm winning. I know I can put my closer in the pen in San Diego, down two with a man on second, nobody out. I know I can get my closer ready right now and pitch that one inning. And I just don't feel like getting a win like that. I don't feel like – now, this is a guy. They ended up in last place. We ended up passing him up. But this is a guy that was looking for wins, and he had to worry about his job. But instead, he did the right thing, and he said, Murph, I don't know about you, man, but I don't feel good about taking a win this way by getting – maybe we score another run and just getting three outs with my closer in the fifth on a Sunday afternoon. People have left the stadium with the 2-hour delay. He said, I think we either bang it right here or we play all nine until we got a window to play all nine. I thought that was the classiest move I've ever heard of in baseball. Mm-hmm. For a guy that was not going to the playoffs, a guy that was not – he's the bench coach now of the Braves. But I tell everybody the story because I want people to know how much character that takes, you know. I'm working for a guy with unbelievable character, you know, man. Like, he just – he's just a guy with character, you know. Like, he just gets it. It doesn't mean he does the right thing all the time or is the smartest guy in the room. He's got a bad personality, but he's really he's really good. He's as good a baseball person as ever been around because he doesn't pretend like he knows everything. But the truth is, guys like Walt Weiss, Craig Counsell, to me, that character, that understanding the big picture, that not trying to be a know-it-all, you know, not trying to be the star of the show, I mean, that's the best managers for me.
Murph, what's your responsibilities like? What's your duties look like before a game? What's the work that you prepare for?
Well, yeah, you got to have conversations with the pitching people, the hitting people. You know, I'm always talking to counts, but the options we have on the bench, the options they have on the bench, the matchups, you got to get in the videotape and look at special things that the other team does. Try to take advantage of pitchers that we can run on certain pitchers in the pen. You're kind of critiquing the scouting report, making sure little tweaks. So you're questioning your advanced people, and you're talking to players before the game and giving them a heads up on little things. You know, this guy never doubles up in. He never doubles up in. He every time he comes into you hard, he's going to the other side of the plate or he's throwing an off-speed pitch. You know, just little secrets that obviously you clear it through the hitting coach, but you know, you're trying to pick up all that stuff and prepare. But when you do it every single day for 6 months, it gets to be a little more relaxed. There's not a panic or a, you know, intensity. It's kind of a smooth. If you're sitting in there, you're like, wow, these guys are relaxed. They got a game in 4 minutes. Yeah. You know, I still got time in 4 minutes. I still got time to lace my shoes and, you know, whatever it might be. So as long as you're out for the anthem.
And players that seem to be in that position, I mean, those are players that are mentally prepared. That's why they're so relaxed.
Yeah, they're clear, man. They're clear. They're prepared. They know what's going to happen. No surprises. They're getting ready to perform. You know, they don't want a bunch of information at the end. They don't want to get confused. They want to know what they want to know. And that's a real key, is what questions and what information to give them. You give them too much information, they go up there with, you know, too many socks in their top drawer. It's hard to close that drawer and be smooth.
You know, in a long season, there's got to be times where you told counsel something, you know, you recommended something, you know, and he did it, and maybe it didn't work, you know, because it's going to happen, right? Good or bad.
Awesome.
You know, mentally, you know, for a bench coach, I mean, sure, you know counsel for a long time, but if you don't know somebody that well, mentally, you could think, oh, man, you know, it didn't work, and I don't want to advise him anymore as much. I'm gonna sit back.
Nah, you just build that relationship with him, that connection. He knows, if he's managing, he's probably pretty sharp, and he knows you're not trying to tell him what to do. He knows you're giving what based on you the information you have. Now, if he thinks you're not prepared, that's different. But I think there's a way to do it. Like I was saying to Jay, like, you know, like if you put in a question, hey, Counts, you think this might be a good time for Aggie right here? Oh, it's a right-handed pitcher, Murph. Yeah, but he hits the breaking ball good. He's got a good history against this guy. You know, all of a sudden you go, he thinks twice about it. Then he makes his own decision. And he doesn't – every decision you make as a manager – I had Dave Roberts as my bench coach for 90 games. Like, every decision I made was my decision, but he helped me with a lot more than he got wrong. He got a lot more right, you know, so – that's just part of it. You build a respect.
What's changed in the game as far as decisions? I mean, are there – you remember we have a lot of unwritten rules in the past. Some of those seem to have kind of gone to the wayside. There's just different rules that maybe managers don't follow as much as they used to. What are some of those that you kind of –
Yeah, well, today the game is so live. You know, like a reliever goes in the game, walks a guy, a bloop, and then all of a sudden guy bangs a three-run bomb. It's a new game. Now you're up five, now you're up two. used to be going into the ninth up five, you're fine. Anymore, you just never know. You know, depending on, you don't want to use your closer. So depending on what you have, you're just like, the game's a little more volatile. There's a lot more runs to be scored quicker. You know, a lot more people going deep. And three-run homers.
You see closers coming in a little earlier at times also? That's something different?
Well, the usage of the bullpen is been revamped. And we've been big proponents of, you know, how important are these outs versus the last three? If you're up 3-0, how important are those outs? Or it's a one-run game in the seventh with Arenado, Story, and one of their other great hitters coming up. You know, it's like, you know, you have to make a decision. Do you bring them then, or do you bring them, you know, or do you go the old school way of just, oh, okay, this is my seventh inning guy? Well, that might not be the way it works out. You know,
you coached the Olympic team for the Dutch in 2000 Sydney Games, and the manager actually. And there's a question here, kind of relates to this a little bit, from Slowmo. It says, how can I make a good player great when he doesn't have the level of competition that challenge him to make him better? Sometimes that happens internationally because you don't see the high velocity, and all of a sudden you got to go in and you're facing guys with high velocity.
Yeah, I think you got to challenge him. That's where you got to get out of the box a little bit, and you got to challenge him in ways that are going to prepare him for that better velocity or that better competition. You know, you got to help him understand that with the higher competition, the game's going to be faster. And how do you slow the game down more? What's that going to look like? I don't know that there's anything more than putting him in trying to create situations that are competitive and not let him waste his work, but make an intended work.
How did Pat Murphy change when it comes to umpires, college baseball, managing in the big leagues? What's your recommendation for coaches as far as the relationship with umpires? Because I think that's a big part of in a long season, especially.
It doesn't pay to do what I did. I intimidated him. I was on their ass. I was on their ass and threatening them from Jump Street. And it just doesn't pay. You know, in the College World Series twice, well, one Super Regional, one College World Series, our team was called for a balk during an intentional walk, saying our pitcher during an intentional walk didn't come to a complete stop with a man on third to walk the game off.
Wow.
In the Super Regional, 2005 Super Regional in Fullerton. He didn't come to a complete stop while he was walking a guy, a second and third one out. And then in the College World Series 2 years later, I had a left-handed pitcher with a man on third and two outs. Man on third and two outs. Slow runner at third. They called our pitcher for a balk for not coming to a complete stop. With a man on third, two outs. Like, what was going to happen? How did that – didn't come to a complete stop? I mean, ridiculous. So where does that come from? My treatment of the umpires over the years, I was inappropriate. Just like thought that this guy's screwing me every day. It was personal, you know, and I could tell. And everybody else gets big strike zone. How come I don't, you know, the teams I coach? And I was just, it was all in my mind, you know, and I did a horrible job with umpires. Now I think the umpires in the big leagues would say, you know, like, hey, this guy respects us. He messes with us a lot. I mess with him a lot. And give him a hard time, but there's no, the game's changed so much. As, you know, umpires have it a lot better in the big leagues than they ever had. Amateur umpires, I haven't been there in a while, but I would handle it a lot different. You know, they deserve to be respected. It's a good antidote to show your players that this is part of the game, and the only way to influence it positively is to be respectful.
You know what? I was curious. You know, dealing with especially major league players, when you go out to the mound, your mindset, you know, obviously you have a lot of preparation, but when you go out to the mound to make a change, is your mind set up, or you always hear this all the time, or are you taking the pitcher's advice or information that he might have?
I think your mind's made up. I think what happens is you let an experienced, successful player talk you into staying. Great, great story. I got another great story. Sorry, you guys, if you've some of you are probably sleeping, but
no, stories are great, man.
All right. So College World Series 05, we're playing Nebraska, elimination game. It's a sea of red. in Omaha for the Cornhuskers. And they had beaten us the day before. Chamberlain, Joba Chamberlain, shoved it on us. And then we came back and beat somebody, Tennessee or somebody. And then we got to play Nebraska again. They had gotten beat by somebody. And we're in the elimination game. I'm in the eighth inning. A kid by the name of Pat Bresnahan from Massachusetts, tough kid. Everybody loved him. And he's throwing for us. And we got a freshman coming to the plate for Nebraska, a right-handed hitter. I got my closer ready. There's two men on. I walk out to the mound. I call the outfielders in. And I go, hey, guys, it's your decision, man. What do you think? Brez got it or not? Now, I knew what I wanted to do. I needed Brez to give me this out because I knew we were in an elimination game and we're going to have to use our closer back-to-back-to-back, you know, if we want to keep going. So I want Brez to get the out. So I said, hey, guys, what do you think? Knowing that they would all say, leave him in there, man. He's fine. He's fine. Because they all love Brez. You know, Brez was like the biggest partier on the team and had everybody's back. And, you know, he had a lot of great qualities. Anyways, so he would so, of course, everybody looked at me like, hey, man, we got this. Leave him in, man. He's great. We got this. We got this. So I feel great about it. I turn around and walk off the mound. That worked, you know. Zinico was out in the pen. He's looking at me like, what the heck? This is my job right here in the eighth. And second pitch, this kid hits a homer to left. Oh. Not only did he hit a homer to left, our left fielder ran into the wall, knocked himself out. So he had to come out of the game, Colin Curtis. And they took a two-run lead. And, you know, it just happens. You know, you trusted them, and it happens. I still trusted them. And we ended up winning the game in 11 innings, the famous ESPN Classic. But
that's great. Yeah,
you do it. You know, you let them talk you into it, or you try to create something. You know, best thing is just be prepared, man. Be prepared for these games. Joe Maddon told me, man, you got to manage a game three times. You know, you manage a game before the game, and then you talk to the bench coach and the manager, managing it right before the game again, and then you manage it again after the game. You know, it's you got to think through it. If this happens, then this, and then if this. I mean, it's worth going through it. It's an exercise, but it's worth going through it.
You know, folks, we got about 8 minutes. Pep has been fantastic for his time. I really appreciate it. So if you got any questions, type them up. You know, Pat, what about lineups? You know, you talk about, you know, what Joe Mann said. When do you prepare your lineups? Are they checked by other people? Do you discuss it when you were managing or coaching?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. This may shock a lot of guys out there, but I think the only rule I have is the best hitters hit the most, you know, and then trying to orchestrate who's going to come in. And then obviously you don't want to bunch your lefties together, but as Pesci would tell you, Marcus used to bunch his lefties together all the time because nobody had that many lefty relievers that are going to not blow through that group. Yeah. And they were his best hitters sometimes. And, but there's different ways to do things. I just think make sure your best hitters hit a lot. And don't try to go through, well, my leadoff hitter gets on base, my 2-0 hitter moves him over, my 3-0 hitter is my best hitter, my 4-0 hitter is my power guy, my 8-0 hitter is my second cleanup guy. I mean, that's just all – that's by the wayside. That was a great way to do it back then, but the game's changed, and your best hitters hit the most. And I don't care about lineups that much as long as that the best hitters are hitting the most. I don't care about who hits where as long as we're not going to be stuck at the end with a specialty righty getting three righties in a row, or especially lefties. And sometimes you can't avoid that either. But, you know, make your best hitters hit the most.
What's your recommendation maintaining all the players? You know, Joe Mann's pretty good at it. Maintaining players, you know, consistently throughout the season, keeping them warmed up and keeping them in the game a little bit. So that way they're not just sitting there for a whole, you know, whole week.
Yeah. Well, the big league game is way different because we play so many games, you're all going to get in. I think American tougher to do that than the National League game. You got American League players, you know, getting two at bats, you know, a week. Well, that's not good for anyone. You got to keep it going. And I think Council does an unbelievable job to not being afraid to play the guys on your team. And you got guys on your team, you play them, you know, and everybody's a starter, you know. And yeah, I think it goes for the pitching staff too. If you're on the pitching staff, you can help us. And it's good to incorporate them all.
And you made some changes. I mean, you see it even in the big leagues now more and more. Guys aren't showing up, you know, like the clubhouse, man closes the clubhouse at a certain time. You know, there's no BP You don't see infield and outfield as much anymore. Talk a little bit about that before we close.
Yeah, infield, outfield for me was a way that the teams that would barnstorm all over the country, they would get on the field for 15 minutes and take the balls that they potentially were going to get in the game. Backhand, forehand, slow roller, you know, one hop to my left and my right, outfielders to your left, to your right, over your head, coming in, you know, and catchers throws a second, throws a third, bunts. I mean, that was something they did as a warm-up. Well, these guys are there at noon, you know. We've got enough warm-up. And that's why you don't see an infield outfield, because there's not the urgency to get ready. When your bus pulls in at 6 and you got to play at 7, it's a great idea. But I think, you know, that's gone from the game, the infield outfield.
Hey, Shlomo's got a question here.
Shlomo asked a lot of questions, man.
Yeah, Shlomo, they love the game. He says, heart versus skill in a player. How important are both, and what takes precedence?
Yeah. Well, I mean, skill is really important, and every skilled player can bring out his heart. Every skilled player can find his mental toughness. Don't, you know, the guys that are toughest to love need the love the most. So usually the guys with heart, everybody loves. Okay, well, I get that. But a guy with really good skill, if you teach him and understand him and seek to understand him, it might be tougher to love him, but he needs the love. So focus on him. He's got the great skills. The guy with the heart's going to show up no matter what you do. And there's a balance there. But I think we spend way too much time saying, oh, it's a great kid. Oh, it's a great kid. Great kid. Well, I can get a great kid to go fill up my car and gas, but I'm trying to get a hit off Iglesias, who's dropping down and throwing paint on the outer half. You know, like I need skill.
You know, and that kind of ends it with this. This be a good one to end it with, as far as, you know, it is. We ask this all the time. It obviously it's a game compared to other games. There's more failure. Guys are going to go through a slump in the big leagues or go through struggles. How do you deal with that as a coach? How do you know, what's the communication? What's the talk like?
I mean, that's them. They have to understand that it's the journey, it's the process, and focus on the process. Did you swing in a good pitch? Okay. Was your ball flight the right way? Were you on time? Did you see it real good? That's the process, you know, and keep focusing on the process. The results will take care of themselves, and we all are going to go 0-for-20. The pitchers, did I make a pitch? Did I understand it? Did I make it with conviction? Did I hit my spot? You know, did I try to overcook it? You know, that's the process. You know, did I understand the hitter, what he was trying to do? You know, that kind of thing. So,
you know, Brian Freeze asked, and I got another minute. Brian Freeze asked, as a bench coach, how important is it for you to be on page with the hitting coach prior to the game? And you talked about preparation with the coaches. And are you doing your own research, or is it a combination?
No. I mean, the advanced scouts do so much. We go in and do our own, but I don't jump in on the hitting stuff. I look at the starting pitcher of the other team, and I'm like, hey, or made notes when we faced them last time. Hey, John Lester will do this. John Lester will throw that cutter on the inner half over and over. You know, Lester will try to tease you on the ball away. You know, like they know that already, but maybe something I say to the hitting coach jogs something or a concept that he can give to a player that day that makes it, you know, easier to clear the mind and kind of look for one thing.
You know, let me get to one more, because then we're coming to the end here, guys and gals. I appreciate it. So it's almost common in most of the talks where at the end the questions come, you know, they come flying at you. I try to get them early, but let's try this one. How important is it today that WAR is in the structure of a team?
That what?
WAR. That it's used in the
wins above, replacement.
Replacement, yeah.
I think the interpretation of WAR and who's doing it and what ingredients are in it, there's no one set way that people are interpreting WAR now. But I think that it's obviously a great stat. It's obviously, it can be skewed one way or another, but I think WAR is important. It's revealing. It's revealing. Players with really good WAR are usually really good players. So if that's an answer to it, it's kind of simplistic. You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, if the guy's got a really good WAR, he's probably done some really good things, but let's dissect it a little further. Just like everything else, just like picking anything else. Like, is it right for you? Is it right for this team? Does it complement this? You know, you can't be all things to all people. You know, you got to try to be as good as you can be and keep yourself from being vulnerable to certain types of pitching. Keep yourself, when it comes to position players, the same thing. Like, if you have a relief staff that's all got a real high WAR, but none of them get out lefties that well, well, then you're going to struggle. So there'd be a reason to say, well, we need a righty that can get out a lefty on a consistent basis.
Yeah, and you said it well earlier, you know, utilizing the statistics and all that, but also the human factor. You got to balance all that.
So no doubt.
I think you said it fantastic. Pat, last thing, just for the folks, the coaches, any last-minute advice? I know we could be talking all day, but, you know, getting into coaching, any last-minute advice for all our coaches out there?
Yeah, it's not a job, guys. It's not a job. It's a life work. Keep your head down. There's a lot of potholes. There's a lot of potholes and a lot of ways to step in it. And I've done them. I've stepped in a lot of them. And the way to do it is keep your head down. The prize is the prize. It'll come. It won't be that great, but the journey is what it's all about. And, you know, keep yourself under construction. Keep your tools with you. Keep evaluating, but walk with certainty. Stay behind yourself. Walk with certainty. Surround yourself with good people. And be genuine, grateful, giving, and gentle.
All right. Great way to end it. Pat, can't thank you enough, man. Hope to see you soon on the field in Chicago when you guys are in town.
My pleasure, man. Look forward to it.
All right. That's Pat Murphy. Fantastic. Loved it. And this is actually the Caliendo and Pesci show today. So thanks to Jay Pesci also for joining us.
Thanks, Murphy.
Again,
good to see
I'm
you.
Your host, Pete
My
Caliendo.
Pleasure, Jay. Great seeing you, man.
Thanks, everybody on Zoom, Facebook, Twitter. Thank you to the Lineup Media Group, our producer, Brian Kroc. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, the show that loves to interview baseball's best coaching minds that love the challenge of status quo. We had a great one on today. Pat Murphy, thanks to Pat. Thank you to everybody listening. You guys make our show. Please spread the show around the world. We just need you to help us out and get it out because it's growing, growing, and growing. So God bless y'all. We'll see you all on the field soon. And see you on tomorrow's show with Eric Cressy with the New York Yankees performance coach. See you later, guys.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.